is Backstreet Boys reuniting virtually on Zoom with the reprise of their 1999 hit, You Know It, I Want It That Way. Did music help you get through 2020? We're revisiting the year in music here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Clubs closed, tours canceled, not to mention all those festivals that told us this summer, see you in 2021. Let's put that all aside and just focus on what artists created for us. What artist, song, or album did you connect with this year? It's 800-642-1234. Stephen Thompson is a writer, editor, and reviewer for NPR Music. He created NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, and he's a Wisconsin native, maybe wearing his Packers hat now, maybe not, I don't know. Stephen, welcome back to Wisconsin and the Ideas Network.
It's great to be here. I am literally wearing a Packers hat right now.
I knew it. I knew it. It would be on. I just had that feeling. So, you know, with the pandemic, it has affected every aspect of life for everyone. How has your relationship with music changed given all of the circumstances this year?
I think for me, it's been tricky because the pandemic has so greatly disrupted my routines. I love listening to music in my car. I love listening to music on headphones as I walk around. And like a lot of people, I've spent most of certainly the latter 9 months of the year just kind of milling around my house in my sweatpants. And, you know, I listen to music at home, but I don't necessarily listen to it in the same way. And so I've really, as somebody who really needs to keep up on music for work, it's been really challenging. And I've had to kind of reset a lot of the ways that I listen to music in order to stay on top of it, because there's still so much music.
Do you think that your genres changed for you? Did your moods change with the music you wanted to listen to?
Boy, that's a good question. I often like music as comfort food. I'm often really drawn to music that settles my nerves. I'm a little bit of an anxious person, so I often like music that takes me down a notch a little bit. Mm. But at the same time, like, I have a lot of sources of comfort food right now. I'm in my house all the time. I'm currently wearing sweatpants. I'm talking to you about 12 feet from a fireplace. So, you know, I think you can also overdose on comfort food a little bit. So I've also liked music that's taken me out of that a little bit and had a little bit of righteousness to it and a little bit of you know, kind of raw nerves.
Mm, yeah, a little bit daring when we can't be as daring in our own homes. Yeah. Well, Tiny Desk Concerts, they continued. They also shifted a bit for COVID. Tell us about how Tiny Desk at Home came together.
Yeah, I mean, it came together entirely out of necessity. On March 11th, we recorded our last Tiny Desk concert in the NPR Music offices.
Wow.
We typically have three or four performers a week come through and record those sessions. And all of a sudden, it wasn't safe to have live music in our office. In fact, my last day in the office was March 13th. And that series is so important to what NPR Music does. By the end of March, we had started recording Tiny Desk home concerts, having musicians, in their kind of rehearsal spaces in their homes, recording concerts that still retained kind of the spirit of the Tiny Desk concerts, that intimacy and warmth without obviously the presence of a crowd. And so it really, like, we managed to, you know, we've got this amazing team that puts Tiny Desk concerts together, incredible videographers and audio engineers and producers who make that series. I was amazed at how quickly they were able to pivot and within a matter of about 2 weeks start recording something that was true to the pandemic and still true to the communal feel of Tiny Desk concerts.
Yeah, they didn't lose the feel of it and the nature of in the spirit of Tiny Desk, which is so important. We're talking with NPR Music Stephen Thompson. He's here. So we're going to break down the year through music and listen to quite a bit of music here. You can join in with what you've been listening to in 2020. What's your soundtrack? 800-642-1234. Before we dive in, Stephen, we heard from Ron, who called from Madison and said two songs summarize 2020 for him. Cold Missouri Waters. It's by from Cry Cry Cry. It's about a bunch of firefighters getting killed in a forest fire. And then Blue Christmas, Elvis. Ron's wife caught COVID in a nursing home and passed away last month. And he heard this song 2 days later and had, you know, Blue Christmas had such a significance to him. So Ron there telling him about a piece of, you know, how music has really impacted him in these last days of 2020.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, wow. I mean, music is has such an amazing way of kind of expressing and capturing our feelings in ways that we ourselves can't always. And man, it's worth remembering as we kind of sum up 2020, that it's not just about sitting in our houses in our sweatpants. It's also about just an incredible amount of loss. And, you know, music has a way of articulating those feelings in ways that can be hard for us.
Yeah. Can we start with Fiona Apple, who released her first album in 8 years? You know, I'm from the older era of Fiona when she broke out with Tidal, you know, like Shadow Boxer and Sleep to Dream, when I played that on repeat on my pretty little compact disc. Were you there? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's never made a bad record.
I know. Well, now she's out with Fetch the Bolt Cutters. Let's hear a bit.
And you maim when you're on offense, but you kill when you're on defense, and you've got them all convinced that you're the means and the end. All the VIPs and PYTs and wannabes, afraid not being your friend. And I've always been too smart for that, but you know what? My heart was not. I took it like a kid, you see. The cool kids voted to get rid of me.
So she recorded this almost entirely in her home. What do we know? What can you tell us about this?
I mean, this is an amazing record. It's my album of the year. You know, it was originally supposed to come out in October. It was recorded in pre-pandemic times, even though she recorded it at home. And it was supposed to come out in October, and she actually made the decision right at the beginning of when so many of us were quarantined that she wanted to put it out in April instead, to actually kind of move it up. So much entertainment moved back in 2020, but she just wanted this record to kind of get out into the world and for people to experience it. And wanted for people to experience it while they were bored and in isolation. And it is just such a clever and thoughtful and catchy and quotable piece of music. It manages to be warm and weird and also confrontational at the same time. It's this very, very, it's a record that only Fiona Apple could have made. And like I said, before we heard that piece of music, she has never made a bad record. You talked about Tidal, her first record when she was like 23 years old. That's a fantastic record. I can't name a bad Fiona Apple song. So she puts out records kind of on her own pace, at her own schedule. And there's never been a bad one.
Yeah, experimental with this one. Barking Dogs, Battering on the Walls. So really playing with sound.
Yeah, and then there's a point at the first track of this record is called, I think it's called I Want You to Love Me. And at one point in the song, she starts like chirping like a dolphin. and the song really like takes you on this journey. But like near the end of the song, all of a sudden she's like... And you're like, oh, this record's going to take us some places. So it manages to be accessible and still have room for Fiona Apple barking like a dolphin.
Oh, well, there's Fiona Apple, and then there's Taylor Swift's song Cardigan off her first album of the year, Folklore. NPR's Stephen Thompson, our guide for the year in music. With your reflections, 800-642-1234. What helped transport you this year? Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. This is Kyoto off of Phoebe Bridgers' 2020 acclaimed album, Punisher. Themes of darkness, loss, boredom, sadness. We're looking back appreciating the year in music here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. What was your soundtrack? What did you listen to on walks, alone in the woods? Join in 800-642-1234. Stephen Thompson is a writer, editor, and reviewer for NPR Music, and he's our guide. Stephen, Punisher, Phoebe Bridgers, wow. What do you think of this album?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it is one of my very, very, very favorite albums of 2020. I get to brag about this all the time that I got to be a very, very, very early adopter on Phoebe Bridgers. I wrote an article for NPR Music in January of 2017 with the headline, "The Best New Artist of 2017 Might Just Be Phoebe Bridgers."
And now
in the year 2020, almost 2021, she is nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammy Awards. And so I feel very, very smug about the rise of Phoebe Bridgers. But I've also, in the last couple weeks, as I've kind of gotten to wind down a little bit on covering new music, I've gotten to go back and really revisit this record and spend more time with it. And it is such a treasure. She's so quotable and wry, and but while still making music that is really sad and heartfelt and beautiful, but there's just this undercurrent of cleverness in her phrasing. I love this record so much. And there are still lines from this record that jump out at me in ways that they maybe didn't when I was first hearing this record back in May and June. So I've just loved watching people embrace this artist, and it's been such a thrill to watch her talent develop and to just watch her fully come into her own as a pretty remarkable artist.
Well, she did this really lovely, wide-ranging conversation with your colleague Sam Sanders of It's Been a Minute, yeah. And I just got so engrossed in their conversation. I kept thinking, she's so nice. She's so down to earth.
she's come through and done. She's done three or four Tiny Desk concerts, like in her pretty short career. So she's somebody we've really, really loved and embraced at NPR Music. And every time she's come through, she's just so funny and down to earth, and just she's just cool.
Yeah, and she said she won't take touring for granted again. I kind of chuckled on that one.
Yeah, there are so many things you think about, like, oh man, am I ever going to get to, you know, yeah, just like are my feet ever going to stick to another sticky floor at a club, you know? You miss things you didn't think you'd miss.
I'm going to reintroduce you here, Wisconsin native and writer, editor, and reviewer for NPR Music. Stephen Thompson is here breaking down the music of 2020 with your thoughts on what you are listening to this year at 800-642-1234. I want to move back here to Taylor Swift, who released two albums this year, and we did some whiplash because, you know, one came out and then all of a sudden there was another. Let's listen to a bit from 'Tis the Damn Season from Evermore.
So we could call it even, you could call me babe for the weekend. 'Tis the damn season right there. I'm staying at my parents' house in the road now. Taking looks real good now, and it always leads to you in my hometown.
So, Stephen, where do Folklore and Evermore land in Taylor Swift's evolution?
Well, I mean, Folklore, it's easy to forget because she's put out so much music this year, but Folklore, when it came out, was a huge left turn for Taylor Swift. You know, she had made a string of very, very, very popular and successful records that, you know, kind of started out in a country vein and then kind of tilted more and more toward this like very, very heavily produced pop. And Folklore came out, and it's this kind of dusky, autumnal, you know, very sonically rich folk pop record that she made with Aaron Dessner from The National. It had you know, guest vocals from Justin Vernon of Bon Iver, since we're in Wisconsin.
Yeah, shout out to Bon Iver, Eau Claire, yes.
Yeah, there's a real Eau Claire vibe to Folklore, which, hey, I'm here for that all day long. You know, so those records really are left turns in her catalog, but I think Folklore was so extremely well received and so, you know, respected, not, you know, not only by Taylor Swift fans, but by critics. You know, it's nominated for Album of the Year at the Grammys. I really think it's going to win. You know, she really kind of used the pandemic as an opportunity, I think, to challenge herself musically and try some things that she'd never really had an opportunity to do.
Maybe she had more space, perhaps more time to be able to sit with herself and really sit with her music.
Yeah, well, you mentioned when you were talking about Phoebe Bridgers how much, like, she suddenly found herself missing tour. You know, Taylor Swift was supposed to spend this year, you know, performing at arenas. And so all of a sudden, when you have one expectation that you're going to be kind of put out into the world and just kind of regurgitating the same songs live, not that touring is a bad thing, but, you know, she wasn't necessarily expecting to spend 2020 creating music. And I think she kind of took the opportunity to experiment and try new things. And I think that for her opened the floodgates of creativity in really interesting ways.
Mm, yeah. Well, new paragraph here, Dua Lipa gave us a dance record. Future Nostalgia came out at the end of March. And here is the song Levitating. If you want to run away with me, I know a galaxy and I can take you for a ride. I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm where the music don't stop. So she had a Thanksgiving live stream that drew 5 million viewers, really?
Yeah. Yeah, Dua Lipa has had a massive year. And this Future Nostalgia record has just really captivated a lot of people. I think it manages to hit in this sweet spot, even though it was, you know, recorded entirely before, you know, COVID-19. This record, I think, really transported a lot of people to the dance floor, kind of transported a lot of people to the club, you know, while synthesizing a lot of the last kind of 35 or 40 years of pop and kind of disco and dance music. I think it really made a lot of people feel some of the connections that they experienced when they would go out to the club. Yeah. And ways that, I mean, it's called Future Nostalgia. In a way, it was kind of anticipating the future nostalgia, you know, that when she was recording it, that in 2020, we would all feel nostalgia for the kind of connectedness that we got from, you know, going out into the world and intermingling with strangers.
Yeah, and perhaps a new era, a new chapter for the music business, really seeing the profitability of live streaming worldwide.
Yeah, and that's been a really hard thing to figure out. You know, I think a lot of musicians, a lot of entertainers have really kind of learned alongside the rest of us what works and what doesn't in a virtual world. What works when you are, you know, trying to reach the public from, if you're me, the, you know, a closet in your house. Yeah. You know, you're still you know, as a musician, you're still performing for the world and kind of figuring out what works and what doesn't. What are people willing to pay for? What are people going to get the most out of in a live performance that isn't a live performance where you're in the same room? I think we're all kind of still feeling out what works and what doesn't.
Okay, so Puerto Rican rapper Bad Bunny on the scene in 2020 performs only in Spanish. Here is Daquita. Ya yo me enteré, se nota cuando me ve, ahí donde no has llegado, sabes que yo te llevaré, y dime qué quieres beber, es que tú eres mi bebé, y de nosotros quién va a hablar, si no nos dejamos. One reviewer said he has a very good writer, fantastic punchlines, and it just made me smile. I love it when someone says, they're a very good writer, you know?
Yeah, Bad Bunny had an absolutely colossal year in 2020, kind of like Taylor Swift in that it was not only that he was making music that was really connecting with people, he was making an absolute ton of it. You know, he put out three albums. I mean, it was kind of two official new studio albums and then also a collection of kind of odds and ends. And, you know, Bad Bunny became the first artist to release an album that was entirely in Spanish that hit number one on the Billboard 200 albums chart. You know, he's kind of started 2020 performing at the Super Bowl. I mean, he has really like spent the entire year just doing extremely well received, extremely popular music that really, really broke through with a worldwide audience.
Yeah, does this what does this mean for music sung in other languages other than English?
I mean, I think it's been a really big year for entertainment that is not performed in English. I mean, if you remember way, 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 way back in the before times of February 2020, when the best picture at the Academy Awards was Parasite, uh-huh. you know, which was a film, you know, entirely subtitled. If you're a U.S. viewer, BTS, the Korean pop group, had its first number one single in America. Now that song was entirely in English, but it just felt like international music, international entertainment really broke through to U.S. audiences in new ways in 2020, in ways that are really, really exciting for me as a consumer and a fan of music and entertainment. The world is kind of getting bigger and smaller at the same time. Yeah. and I think we're more notionally open to music and movies and TV shows and stuff that weren't necessarily made for U.S. audiences. And I think we're becoming savvier as consumers, and it just opens us up to so much great entertainment that we haven't allowed ourselves to be exposed to.
NPR Music, Stephen Thompson, back in a moment after this news update on the Ideas Network.
"'Twas a dark day in Dallas, November 63. A day that would live on in infamy. President Kennedy was a right line. Good day to be living and a good day to die."
It's a tiny morsel from Bob Dylan's 17-minute song about the assassination of President Kennedy. It's called Murder Most Foul. It's off his first album of new material in nearly a decade, Rough and Rowdy Ways. We're exploring the year in music and what artists offered up to us. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How did the pandemic change how you think about or experience music this year? What album just did it for you and is not getting enough credit? Be part of this Music Hour, 800-642-1234. We have NPR's music, Stephen Thompson, writer, editor, reviewer. He's our guide. Stephen, Bob Dylan, it's been almost a decade. What struck you about his Rough and Rowdy Ways collection?
It's interesting. You know, when I heard that Bob Dylan's new single, was going to be 17 minutes long, I thought, I really cannot imagine something I would want to listen to less. and then that song came out, and I was like, and every time I listened to it, and I listened to it multiple times, I actually found myself wanting to listen to the whole thing. I don't think there has been a more polarizing song within the NPR music team than that track, because there are several people on our team who consider that among the best songs of 2020. And there are people who would rather listen to literally anything else. For me, that song really, really worked. And I think the kind of the melody of that song and kind of the construction and pacing of that song is really works kind of tremendously well. For me, I kind of hung on his every word in ways that I didn't expect to.
What about the topic? President Kennedy's assassination.
I mean, I think that gives Dylan an opportunity to really lean into a lot of the stuff that he does best. That song is, he weaves in so many, you know, kind of esoteric, you know, pop culture references. Mm-hmm. And like, that is a song, it's like a David Foster Wallace novel. You know, it's a song that comes with footnotes. and if you like to kind of pick apart you kind of pick apart the mystique of a song and really kind of analyze something line by line, a little bit like American Pie,
yeah.
You know, where like, if you listen to American Pie and you're like, oh, this line is referring to this song by the Birds and this song is referring to whatever. This Dylan song has that same thing. Like we actually put out a story in 2020 at NPR Music that was like, kind of breaking down,
breaking it all line, down.
Yeah, line by line, what each reference in the song is referring to for those people who aren't Bob Dylan's age.
Taking us back maybe, to the school course. We're going to take this line by line, folks.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't want every piece of music to require that kind of analysis, but I think having a song that requires a certain amount of study is really interesting. And I think it is a strangely beautiful song.
The Dixie Chicks became the Chicks, and mm-hmm. the album is called Gaslighter. Here is Sleep at Night.
My husband's girlfriend's husband just called me up. How messed up is that? It's so insane that I have to laugh. But then I think about our two boys trying to become men. There's nothing funny about that.
What did you get out of the Chicks on this album and their evolution that they're going through?
Yeah, I really loved this record. they had a very stop and start year in 2020. I mean, this is their first album in 14 years. Excuse me. And, you know, they were going to go on a big stadium tour. They were at the beginning of the year called the Dixie Chicks. And as 2020 unfolded, they kind of kept getting foiled. Being named the Dixie Chicks became a problem as the country experienced a huge racial reckoning around the middle of the year. They wound up changing their name from the Dixie Chicks to the Chicks, as you mentioned. They kept kind of postponing this record because they had really constructed their plans for the year around a big tour that they then weren't able to do. And so, you know, I think that the year didn't really pan out the way that they had hoped, but I really love this record. It is a very specific album about the divorce of singer Natalie Maines. It is referring to, you know, kind of the specifics of the circumstances surrounding that divorce. You know, there's a song on this record called Tights on My Boat, which is like how she found out that, you know, that her partner was cheating on her, and sings about that in very raw and specific ways. And I think for people who, you know, who are maybe are, you know, going through marital strife in 2020 and beyond, this record is going to really speak to a lot of people. And I think it's a shame that it didn't really catch on as much as I thought it was going to. Because it's some of their catchiest work. It's some of their kind of most specific work. And there's some real beauty to it as well.
What is happening to the country genre in this year of the pandemic? Because those long ballads that have lots of lyrics, lots of interest, it seems like we're ready for that this year.
Well, I think country music has been going through a little bit of a reckoning of its own. You know, I think that if you listen to, if you're somebody who has tuned into country radio, as I have a lot over the last 30, 35 years, it had really become extremely male dominated and extremely dominated by one very, very specific strain of country music, namely, men with one syllable first and last names singing about women's bodies. But country music is this incredibly broad and diverse genre with lots of different people making lots of different kinds of music. And I have felt like country radio has started to kind of finally reckon with that a little bit, because a lot of the best country music of this era is being made by women who are struggling to get played on country radio. It has been predominantly a very white genre, and that some cracks in that facade have started to form. So I've been really excited by where I've seen country music go in 2020, where it has the genre has broadened sonically a little bit, but it's also broadened in terms of who is allowed to kind of show up on the playing field.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Stephen Thompson, who writes, edits, reviews for NPR Music. He co-created the podcast Pop Culture Happy Hour, and he's with us as we reflect on the music of 2020. How did the pandemic change how you think about or how you experience music during the pandemic? What have you noticed that you listen to and especially go back to and learn more from each time you listen? 800-642-1234. Stephen, you talk about women. It seems that, you know, women have really been a dominant player in music this year. Here's the band Haim with the song The Steps off of their 2020 album called Women in Music Part 3. Every time I think that I've been taking the steps, you end up mad at me for making a mess. I can't understand, but you don't understand, baby. Do you think that female-led music stood out to you this year?
Yeah, and I think that's been a trend that I've seen play out in music over the last several years. I mean, there was this controversy a few years ago at the Grammy Awards when all the major Grammy Awards went to male artists, and somebody asked Neil Portnow, who was then the head of the Grammys, you know, what do you think about that? And he was like, well, I don't know, women need to step up. And it was just so obviously transparently ridiculous to anybody who was paying attention to music that there was already a lot of the best music was being made by women. And what you've seen play out in the years since is kind of a little bit more of a domination by female artists of the new music that people were really, really talking about and excited about. And I think it's a product of a number of different things. I think you are starting to see the results, or you have been seeing the results for the last several years, of the rise of things like Girls Rock and these organizations that are teaching and encouraging young girls to play music and to really play around in that space. You're now seeing the results of that. You're seeing women who've been playing music since they were little girls and who are doing amazing things with it. I think anytime you throw the doors open to people who are not traditionally represented, you are going to get a ton of great art. And it's art that is coming from perspectives that haven't always gotten wide attention. And so I think right now you're kind of seeing the product of that. You're seeing, you know, just the flood of people's perspectives that haven't always been heard. And that is always, always, always great for culture.
Megan Thee Stallion, speaking of women, what a year that she had. I mean, I don't really know where to start, but what do you see out of her?
I mean, where do you begin? You know, first of all, you know, you're talking about an artist with incredible commercial instincts and somebody, an extremely, extremely talented rapper who's really, really broken through this year. She had two of the biggest hits of the year. One, a collaboration with a Beyonce called Savage Remix, and one called WAP, which is an acronym that I cannot say out loud.
And we can play a bit of music, but we can play a little bit of Savage. Let's listen.
Yeah.
I'm a savage, classy, bougie, ratchet, sassy, moody, nasty, acting stupid, what was happening, I'm a savage, classy, bougie, ratchet, sassy, moody, nasty.
All right, and this was a collaboration, which initially took off on TikTok.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a collaboration between Megan Thee Stallion and Beyonce. She also had WAP with Cardi B, and you know, we're talking about two of the biggest hits of 2020. And I mean, I think one thing that stands out about Megan Thee Stallion, she came through NPR Music's offices late last year and performed a Tiny Desk concert, and it was just remarkable what kind of presence she had, and just the kind of authoritativeness with which she rapped and spoke. It's been really exciting to see her rise, and also really interesting to see the rise of kind of radically explicit statements of women's sexuality coming through in music in ways that it hadn't always been allowed to before. And I think
we just need to pause right there on that thought with Stephen Thompson. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network.
Checking. I'm going back to the south. I'm going back, 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 back. Where my roots ain't watered down. Growing, growing like a bob-bob tree. All life on fertile ground. Ancestor put me on game. Long time on gold chains.
That is no other superstar Beyonce's song Black Parade, a reflection of our time, the demonstrations for racial justice across our nation and world. It came out in the music. We're taking stock of the year in music on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have NPR Music's Stephen Thompson as our guide. He's with us for 10 more minutes. Stephen, Beyonce released a feature-length film and album on Disney Plus called Black is King. What was your impression of this project?
Well, it's an incredibly visually striking project, and it's interesting to watch Beyonce, you know, kind of handed this massive budget to make a kind of a feature length visual celebration of Black life and the Black experience. I'm just going to follow her wherever she goes. You know, I'm just interested in whatever she does. I'm probably more excited about the next like new album she puts out, just because I've loved the last couple records she's made so much. But what really stands out to me about Black is King is just how deeply, deeply heartfelt it is, and how she kind of took the opportunity from having been a voice in that kind of quasi live action Lion King remake that she was involved in, and kind of using that as a jumping off point to really talk about and sing about and make these beautiful videos about topics that are really near and dear to her heart, and kind of taking advantage of that Disney budget in order to do so.
How did the demonstrations for racial justice, for around police brutality, Black Lives Matter, how did all of this affect music this year?
I mean, I think that we're going to see that play out over the course of the next months and years. I think there has been music that I think really tapped into the spirit of those demonstrations. And, you know, like Run the Jewels put out a record that came out on June 3rd that was really like simultaneous with a lot of those demonstrations and really tapped into that spirit. And I think that record really connected for a lot of people. There's a British group called Salt that put out two records in 2020. That deeply captivated people. It's music that really studies and revolves around the Black experience and really speaks to the sense of righteousness and rage around that. But I think that a lot of music is going to come out over the course of the next several years that is gonna kind of work as reverberations of that moment in history.
Well, here, talking about Salt, here's the song Wildfires. Tell us what you hear in this work.
Well, I mean, I hear, you know, you drop the needle at various points on that record, and you're going to get very different feels. I mean, it's a very, very genre diverse record. This was NPR Music's album of the year. It's called Untitled (parentheses) Black Is, and you know, you're hearing this swirl of R&B and jazz, you know, so many different sounds and kind of different eras coming together around some really dense and intense messaging about the state of the world. I mean, this was a record that a lot of us really came back to again and again this year as we kind of wrangled with the year. Because in a way, I don't know, it kind of combines a lot of the different experiences of 2020. To me, this is a record that feels very lived in a way that kind of fits pandemic life. It's a record you can really listen to at home. And yet it is speaking with great urgency to a lot of the news stories that captivated us in 2020.
I want to circle back for a moment to looking at the impact of TikTok. You know, we had heard Savage earlier, which became this global remix featuring, you know, Beyonce and Megan Thee Stallion. What do you see out of TikTok and where music is headed?
I mean, I think it's just another way that music can kind of catch on in the world. You know, it's another way that kind of hooks can burrow their way into our heads. Mm-hmm. It's a way of breaking new artists. You know, it's certainly, and this has been going on, you know, now for several years. I mean, TikTok had a huge, huge role in the rise of Lil Nas X, you know, who was one of the biggest artists of last year. You know, it's just another, it's just another way that music can be, can kind of bypass gatekeepers in really interesting ways. And songs can suddenly become dominant without necessarily having a machine around them. So you have these kind of organic groundswells around music that can happen through TikTok in ways that maybe, you know, people like me who aren't necessarily glued to TikTok don't even realize at first. It just seems like a song has risen to where it's extremely popular, and I don't even realize that TikTok was how it got there.
We are taking stock of how the events of 2020 have been reflected in music with NPR's Stephen Thompson as our guide. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Stephen, I heard choreographer Jaquel Knight on NPR recently, and he was talking about a choreographer talking about copywriting some of his work. And when I thought about how much choreography is part of music, is part of dance, and this, you know, he was the choreographer on WAP with Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B, and he sees dance as a form of activism, but also totally integrated with the music. Where do you see choreography?
Well, I mean, I think it's a reminder of the fact that music isn't just an audio form, right? And that, like, the way we experience music is constantly evolving. I think especially as we're kind of glued to our homes a little bit more, you know, more and more we're kind of experiencing music as videos, you know, and not just something that we're kind of listening through headphones as we go about our day. And it's really interesting. Like, you know, we talked briefly about BTS and the rise of BTS and kind of the dominance of the song Dynamite in 2020. I mean, part of the experience of really enjoying and appreciating BTS, you know, whose music I enjoy, but you really get a richer experience when you're watching the really tight, dense choreography that goes into a lot of their performances. I mean, I think that, you know, there have kind of never, in some ways, never been more ways to experience music, and there have never been more contexts through which to experience music than there are now. And I do think choreography is a huge, huge part of that.
Well, let's bring in Brian now in Madison. Hi, Brian. What are you listening to?
I'm currently listening to you, and it's a wonderful
Nice.
I'm a folk programmer for a community radio station here in Madison, Wisconsin, and I got to say that I've really been impressed by some of the folk music that has come out about and from and by the pandemic, or not by, but by artists that have been affected by the pandemic. John McCutcheon wrote an entire album about having cabin fever, songs about being on the front line workers. Even Milwaukee artist Pat McCurdy has a whole album about pandemic songs, which are very snarky and funny, so it's able to laugh and cry at the same time. So it's been nice seeing how these artists have created folk music that's about what's going on when there's not much going on, because we're all home, and they've been able to still create, and it's been wonderful in that respect.
Brian, thank you so much. What do you think, Stephen, about folk?
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, it's been interesting to watch this kind of flood of music come out of the pandemic, not only because of the inspiration, not only because there's a need to speak to this moment in American history, but also there's a commercial imperative for a lot of these artists to be making music and performing music in some way or another. So many musicians' livelihood boils down to an economic need to perform music live in front of people. And that has been taken away. And that has really devastated the bottom line of a lot of musicians, a lot of venues, a lot of, you know, people who work in the live music industry. And so musicians have, unfortunately, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. I think creatively it has been really powerful, but commercially it's really concerning. I just hope artists are able to continue making a living making music. And so I think, mentioned John.
We have to end it there. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you so much.
Stephen Thompson, writer, editor, reviewer for NPR Music. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to The Ideas Network.